Welcome to the boxing match that is the Libero podcast, firing football fisticuffs at you. I'm your host, Richard Mead, and I'm joined by a fantastic 1-2 combination. In the red corner, he's got the gift of the gab and the gift of the jab. It's Mr. Andrew Lane. Say hello, Andy.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
And in the other red corner, hitting you with hard facts and football opinion, it's Libero's Iron Matt Pritchard. How you doing, Matt?
Yeah, good, although I think I've taken too many headshots.
I thought we'd go for a boxing reference since you're notably bruised.
Yeah, sporting one. Definitely. Came off worse. You should see the other guy. He's looking fucking fantastic.
Oh, I hadn't noticed that. Yeah, you have taken a right sock to the eye, haven't you? Yeah, fair
enough. Bit of a shiner. Bit of a shiner on Matt this week.
Nice. Yeah, funny games.
Fun and games. You're not playing football, are you? You're playing egg ball.
Contact sports.
Egg chasing, yeah.
Contact sports.
Egg chasing.
Well, let's get into it. There's been some international football, and England, for a change, aren't disgracing themselves. We're 2-0 up at the moment against Spain, which I think everyone saw coming, and a convincing 3-0 win against Scotland. I thought this was decent, and credit to Chris for a ballsy 3-1 prediction.
Yeah, I mean, I saw half of it. I didn't see actually all of it, and apparently I missed the John Stones masterclass of when not to clear a ball and to keep playing and give the other opportunities to the opposition side. I think England did get away with it a little bit, according to most people at the start of the sort of first half. But when I turned it on in the second half, it was pretty routine. And it felt like, you know, Southgate had picked a pretty attacking side. They'd looked at what was in front of them. They knew they'd probably get some chances. They'd played their own game. And, you know, he seems to have a little gift at the moment, which a lot of England managers haven't had, is that whoever he picks tends to perform. He can make changes. He can change the striker. I think everyone expected Kane to start up front in this one. Maybe Phil wasn't fit. He picked Sturridge. Sturridge scored. He's got Lallana. I mean, he's probably carried on with, he's taken Lallana's great form. He's also picking players who are in form. You know, he's picked Lingard tonight and he's playing really well for England. I just think it was a fairly accomplished international performance against what is a fairly poor Scotland side. I mean, and also, in a pink kit. We had to beat them in a pink kit. I mean, that is gutting, isn't it? Yeah, chaps, you're playing the old enemy at Wembley. Great, big, great game. Yep. What kit are you playing in? Sorry, say again. You know, it's not a great look, is it? You're going to be a bit gutted when you heard about that.
That's poor. It is poor. You catch it, Matt?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it, bits and pieces. You knew what Scotland were going to come with. You knew they were going to turn up. You knew they were going to try and frustrate. You knew they were going to kind of try to counteract England. I did see that they started, is it Ian Atchianya? Was it right back? He played to try and kind of counteract some of the English pace. It looks like Scotland are going through one of those phases where they don't have a huge amount of them. They've got a lot of kind of players that you might say are kind of maybe 6/10 players. But they look like they're struggling for just that little bit of in kind of international quality that will get you to a tournament. So something, you know,
like James McFadden.
Yeah, something like James McFadden. Yeah. You know, they look relatively toothless up front. They don't look like they've got anything that's going to trouble semi-decent international teams. I think that's kind of the place where England find themselves at the moment. They're a semi-decent international team, and you know, I think we realize they're going to pretty much walk this qualification group again. How much you guys can learn from this, I don't particularly know. It looks like you guys are going to do well against Spain tonight, but as Laney was saying before we started, Spain don't look particularly up for this game or particularly kind of engaged with this game. I watched the first half before we did this podcast, and they didn't look like they had a huge amount up front. Spain look like, again, they're going through one of those spells that perhaps they don't have an out-and-out striker, but again, you know, we've seen what they can do without that out-and-out striker of the past before years since Torres fell off a cliff.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, we've all said that this isn't a Spain first team that they're playing tonight. You know, not that it should be taken away from England that they're 2-0 up, but you know, there's Reina in goal. He's not played a game for Spain in 2 years and given away a pen. You know, their attacking options, considering the attacking options that Spain got, you know, they're pretty poor tonight. Not too much to worry about. And Lane, I know you were happy with the feature of a former Liverpool player in the Spain squad tonight.
Yeah. Iago Aspas. I mean, that was That was a massive shock when I heard it. I wasn't actually looking at the TV and they said Spain are making a change and it's Iago Aspas coming on. Like, I mean,
You can still find him.
I broke my neck turning around to make sure it was the same one. But I mean, I think that does probably emphasize your point. He's doing a great job in La Liga. We all kind of know him as someone who kind of came and played very much second fiddle to anyone that could score a goal in the Liverpool side, and that's in the season where we went close to the title. So, yeah, I think it does show how far they've fallen. I think, yeah, Reina being a goal, he's only just come back into the national side. But they are unbeaten in five. You know, Lopetegui has been changing stuff. He's changed a lot of the players. He's brought in Vitolo from who plays for Seville. He's changed a little bit of the shape. He's really kind of built the whole thing again around Thiago. And although they are missing people up front and kind of in attack, I do still think, you know, they are a good side. You've got Busquets playing in there, you've got Mata, you've got Silva, you've got Azpilicueta playing in defence. You've got, you know, it's a decent side. And so I think it shouldn't be underestimated. But again, it's England, so let's not judge it until we're playing in a hot climate and there's something to play for.
What do you guys think on? So I'll put this in the running order. Are we looking at Lallana as kind of one of England's, if not England's best player at the moment, or most important player?
Are you doing this to wind me up? You are, aren't you? You know I love to hate Lallana, and he's just been on stonking form all season. To be honest, I mean, he's looking as productive and as industrial as anyone we've got out there right now. He's been brilliant for Liverpool all season, and before Lane gets in, I'll admit to that. I think like we don't have that many creative influences coming from the midfield. You know, Dyer's good and Henderson's good, but they're workers. They're not necessarily, you know, you can't see them threading a through ball. Lallana's definitely got it in him. He can play centre, he can play left, you can stick him out on one of the wings, and you feel like he's got something in him to set something up.
His ball tonight for Vardy to create the penalty, absolutely inch perfect. It was brilliant. Such a great ball.
I don't think his talent has ever been in doubt for me. It's been, how does he fit into a system? Where does he play? And the thing that I think sort of is really interesting about him is how he, in this kind of system, he starts the press. He's really intelligent. If you watch him, he's often the player that nicks the ball. And he's almost the trigger for everyone else to go. He's very intelligent at doing that. He knows where Henderson is behind him because of that partnership for Liverpool. And I think that's probably what he's added to his game, is really that kind of that slight level of intelligence. And there's also a confidence to it. I think he also now feels like he belongs to Liverpool. He's got a lot of faith placed in him by the manager. He now feels like he belongs at England as well because he's got his first goal. He's on the team sheet regularly. And I think you can't underestimate how big that is in any walk of life, for any person doing their job.
The issue I've always had with Lallana, I think I've spoken about it on here before this season, was the fact that I didn't know what sort of player he was. I didn't know if he was a 10 or a wide playmaker or an inside forward at a place. I didn't know that about him until this season, when he's really kind of nailed himself on as a player who plays kind of behind the striker and can drift inside and can create things. But as you said, Dylan, I think something that's come to the fore this season is that pressing game. That, like you said, he starts that. And it's something which England, to my knowledge, haven't had for a little while. They seem to be doing a lot more, especially in the game we're kind of watching this evening.
To pick up on one of Lane's good points from an earlier podcast as well. I mean, you said that, you know, when we were talking about Liverpool buying a lot of players from clubs like Southampton, that it was something to learn for those players to come into a team and be expected to win every game, especially at home. And with Klopp and with his experience at Anfield now, you feel like he's got that. You feel like that's the, you know, a switch has flicked in his brain that, you know, that's the expectation of the fans, that's the expectation of the manager, and, you know, they want to be challenging for silverware and the title. And when he gets on the pitch for England, he then looks like that player. He doesn't look like a player who's kind of lost in a system, as you pointed out, Andy.
Yeah, and I think Liverpool especially have seen it with a lot of players over the last few seasons, and when you get to that point, it's when you're then playing around players, I think it really helps. The other thing that I think helps is England have finally realised that taking on elements of the sort of the current psyche that is running through the national, the football that is in the national, the football is in the league that is, you're talking and playing for the national team of, is really important. Yeah. You know, you can't just take players out of the established routines of pressing and playing out from the back and reducing long balls and harassing players and having, you know, different shapes and suddenly go, oh, by the way, now playing 4-4-2 because England, we don't do that. That doesn't work anymore. I think, yeah. And most of the big successes at international level over the last few years have been teams who have built on that style of play. Spain is probably the number one example. They built on that tiki-taka style of Barcelona and what rolled from there. Germany have taken on, well, I guess it's probably slightly different for them, but they have evolved the style of football. And England, I think, look like they have learned lessons. You know, you've got Stones, you've got Cahill, two centre-backs are very comfortable with the ball at their feet. You've got a goalkeeper who's being pushed to play it to them to feet. And you've got a really high press in the middle. So I think it's all good signs. But again, we probably could have said this 2 years ago before the Euro. So I'm holding out judgment until they come through a very tight game in a major tournament and show us that they can actually do it mentally.
So,
with that in mind,
and with Southgate's kind of on his second or third audition, and with the, you know, likelihood that he's going to get the full time job, what have we thought about him so far?
I think he's inherited a really difficult situation, you know, and in a lot of ways, that's the best time to come in. Like, you know, no one wanted to be the person following Alex Ferguson. You wanted to be the person who followed the person who followed the person who followed Alex Ferguson, because people would have forgot about him by then. By coming in after Allardyce and the sort of tournament that we had, you know, going out to Iceland and things like that, and obviously all the controversy that came with the Allardyce scandal, he's kind of he's in a no lose. If he screws it up and we lose all four games, and you know, he's not experienced at international manager level, you know, albeit with the under 21s, he's got some, but there wouldn't have been much to pick apart for Southgate. It would have been very much on the players, on the FA. He can walk out risk-free. I think he's done a pretty decent job of, albeit in a weak group, and, you know, keeping his players' mentality on, you know, right, and keeping them motivated at a time where heads could have dropped. I think that's fair.
I think he's been fairly uncomplicated. I think he's kind of come in, doesn't really want the job, I don't think. Well, he might do, but he wants to kind of earn the job on his own merits. I think he's tried to be pretty uncomplicated, motivate players. He's quite a... managers often at international level, I think, you sort of, they became a bit statesman-like. You know, Sven, you sit back, Hodgson sat back, even McLaren to a certain extent felt like almost he'd reached the point where we didn't have to shout and scream anymore. Southgate feels very close to the action. You know, like tonight, he was really giving instructions to the players. He was kind of out there, he was moving them around, he was showing them where to be in the shape. Now, listen, I mean, I could stand on the sideline and tell people where to be in shape, and it doesn't mean they're going to win. But you feel like he's kind of involved with the players in a coaching mentality, and I think that's probably quite positive, bearing in mind that they need to respect the person there. He's also played the game a lot more recently than a lot of the player managers who've been recently. So, I mean, I think I said on here, he will get the job. I think England don't have a pool of candidates to select from, really. He will walk through this group. We will qualify for Russia. And that will mean that he will deserve probably a shot at the job. And you know what? Why not? Like, the list of mad bastards that could potentially take over. I'll take Gareth Southgate for a punt for, you know, 2 weeks or fun in the sun, fun in Russia. And we'll go from there.
There's no fun to be had in Russia.
Listen, if England can win a couple of games, there could be some fun to be had for a child. Don't worry about that.
I don't know.
His favourite, Gareth, and, you know, odds on favourite, and Wenger and Eddie Howe and Alan Pardew and Roberto Mancini are just behind him.
I thought you were going to say Alan Partridge for a second there when you kind of paused at the Alan Par.
We have, you know, like you said, mad bastards managing England. Yeah, I mean, Wayne Rooney at 200-1, at least it'll give him a place in the squad. But yeah, I think it's going to go to Southgate, isn't it? Just because it's such a simple choice right now. Who wants the job right now? You know, inherit this player, inherit this team.
Rooney's already said he wants him. So, you know, that's obviously a very complex. I always wonder about that with players as well. Surely when the players start asking for a manager, it's probably the point where you might want to think, actually, maybe we want to think about someone else.
Yeah, it's a bit much, isn't it? Should we move on?
Yeah, should we wriggle on over the border?
Yeah, go on. Let's start with you, Matt, for a bit of Wales 1, Serbia 1.
Difficult one to watch this. It was.
Let's move on.
Yeah, there we go. It's a strange, strange place to be as a Welsh football fan at the moment, coming from about 12 months ago where it was just euphoria and kind of pinching everybody to check that this shit was actually happening, shit was real, and after a summer of watching us kind of massively kind of overachieve at the Euros, every game now we're going into, and there's a level of expectation that there's never been for Welsh international football, and it almost feels like we're not performing anywhere near as well as we did in the Euros qualifying or actually at the Euros. And it almost feels like every game they go into, even if it's an okay performance or a shit performance and an okay result, everything's a letdown at the moment, and everything feels like a loss. You know, we could have done with beating, well, we needed to beat Serbia, really. But Serbia aren't a bad team. They're full of players who actually are, in the mainstay, as good, if not better, than some of the Welsh players.
Yeah.
But by drawing that game, it automatically feels like a loss because of what we achieved at the Euros and the qualifying for the Euros.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Euros last year was hugely put Wales on the map, and everybody's very, very quick to congratulate not just the team as it stands, but also the philosophy that they've had for the last few years. And you know, it's credit to them that they got what they got, which was huge. But yeah, I do wonder if there's a little bit of after the Lord's Mayor show now, because they had such a big tournament, and the expectation does seem to be that when they come up against teams like Serbia, that's a win. And teams like Serbia aren't an automatic win. They've got, as you say, they've got decent players. They can, you know, they can outmaneuver you. And do you think this will dent their chances for qualification? Do you think they're still going to get through? What do you reckon?
I'd like to think we'll still get through, but I don't think we'll win the group now. I think we've left ourselves in a really shitty position with the amount of games we've drawn already in this group. I wonder if, I know we are over-reliant on Gareth Bale, but I wonder if we've become too over-reliant on Gareth Bale now, and actually some of the players aren't stepping up to the levels they need. Because if you look at the three-man midfield we had this weekend, it was Joe Allen, Ramsey and Ledley. And then you got Sam Vokes, who's actually scoring goals in the Premiership, which I didn't think he would ever do. And then Robson Kanu, who is probably still living off that goal in the Euros.
That's it, mate.
That's the career.
He will be living off that forever, yeah.
But you know, you look at Ramsey and Joe Allen, and they're not performing at the level that they need to be performing at, really, in that Welsh shirt. So Gareth Bale is dragging us through at the moment, and he's currently, and maybe always has been, a one-man team, but he's one-man team with some really good players just behind him. And for me, Allen, Ledley, Vokes, Ramsey are really kind of letting him down at the moment a little bit by kind of not punching at their weight.
Yeah,
I think it's a bit, you know, without wanting to do the sort of comparison thing, it's a bit like Leicester, isn't it? Serbia are now turning up to try and get a result against the semi-finalists from the Euros. They're not turning up to meet Wales, who are this low in the world. They're on the map, and they're suddenly that game's now a bigger thing. They prepare better. They probably analyse weaknesses and strengths in a bit more depth, and that means that it's harder for Wales to win the games. And it's the point where they now have probably looked at Ledley and Ramsey and Allen and gone, how do we shut them down as well as shutting Gareth Bale down? So I think there's a level of expectation. There's also a level of kind of reality around teams turning up. And Serbia are no mugs, really. They've got some really decent players. So I think it's about finding that balance and actually finding ways to get around. If they're cutting off supply lines to Gareth Bale, or if they're cutting Gareth Bale out of the game, it's finding ways for those players to step up around them and beat the impediments the other team and put in front of you. It is, you know, football's 11 against 11, and sometimes it's really hard because the other 11 guys just go, we're going to stop you doing what you do well. And that's, I think, what's happened to Wales a little bit at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there was certainly a sense for me that I thought Coleman was going for this game because he changed his formation, didn't he? We're used to watching Wales play a 5-3-2. He went to flat back 4-4-2. And I think the idea was to, you know, give those players that Matt mentioned a bit more influence in the game further up the field. And he probably felt that this is one that they needed to win, or certainly wanted to win, to put them in a much better position. I mean, as we've said, you know, they're sitting third at the moment on 6 points, Serbia on 8, Republic of Ireland on 10. There's no reason they can't qualify, but I think this is a game they would have really wanted to win, and they set up to win, so that 85th minute equaliser would have been a real heartbreaker. What do you make of that change in formation, Matt? Do you think that was a big deal, or do you think it was just for me it looked like it was quite bold. It was quite kind of, we want this. I would have been quite happy as a fan, but it obviously didn't pay off.
I actually think if you look at the way we're set up, I think we're better. The back four looks better suited. At times I've seen us play against decent teams with a back three, and Ben Davis he's not a centre back. He's been playing left side of a back three. He's not a centre back, and I've seen us get caught out a number of times when we've been playing that, trying to play that formation. The back four looked a lot more stable to me, and everyone looks far more secure in that back four. And actually, if you look at it on paper, it's a really good back four. Then you have a three-man midfield in front of them, which I think is kind of what we went into that game with, having Alan Ramsey and Ledley. And then you kind of had this split formation up front with Hal Robson, Carnu and Bale kind of playing off Vokes a little bit. And it seems to have a much more natural flow to it than our old formations did. But again, I wonder if that's another reason we're perhaps struggling a little bit. Because I think when we were playing our old formation of kind of 5-3-2 or 3-4, whatever formations you want to play, it was a little bit different to what everyone else is playing. It's a little bit less conventional, whereas now we're essentially playing 4-3-3 or a version of 4-3-3. So actually there are players where you now expect them to be players, whereas in the old formation we were playing, it was a little bit different to what every other international team was doing, perhaps.
Yeah, there's some fairness in that. Let's not leave out the other home nations. Want to move on to Northern Ireland, Azerbaijan. Convincing 4-0 win for Northern Ireland, and Lafferty scoring again. He loves a goal at international level, doesn't he? But not necessarily at domestic level.
I think Northern Ireland make a habit of getting these strikers. David Connolly was another one, wasn't he? He was like their all-time record goal scorer, and I think the highlight of his career was playing for Sunderland, at, you know, being the sort of third-choice striker. It was, I think Michael O'Neill, what a job he's done there. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. They've kind of gone into the Euros, and they have continued that good form outside of the, I think they went level second in the group, with that win, which is massive for them. And, you know, the target's got to be, again, to sort of qualify for another straight running tournament. And I think if he does that, you know, it'll be fantastic. They don't have a great squad of players, and they are all pulling together to at the moment. I mean, I didn't say the game, so I can't tell you exactly what I know, but Azerbaijan only, I think, conceded one goal before that, and they were actually sat on 7 points above Northern Ireland. So although it is a comfortable win in Azerbaijan, I'm not going to pull up any trees, it shouldn't have been easy.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. I mean, as you said, there's a lot of teamwork in this, and the momentum to come out of the tournament in the summer and take it straight back into the qualifying is massive. And obviously that's something you just spoke about, Matt, with Wales and struggling to do that. So it's just really decent that, you know, that they've been able to just continue that and find that in the squad, that kind of strength in their mindset to keep that going. As you say, level second, Germany top the group. They can't be expecting to top the group, so, you know, this is as good as they could hope for, surely.
If just looking through their squad at the moment, their squad is, there's no standout names in their squad. You know, you've got people like Johnny Evans, who is one of the better players in that squad. Chris Brunt, one of the better players in that squad. And they say they've got Kyle Lafferty, who's scored 20 international goals. And, you know, that's not to be sniffed at. It's Northern Ireland. He will get far less chances than much, much more established, better strikers, better teams. And he scored 20 goals in 58 games. Yeah. So it's definitely not
solid.
It's not to be sniffed at at all. You know, we've got strikers who, you know, we've got Sam Vokes in our squad, and he's got nothing like that sort of conversion rating. And we are arguably on paper a better team than Northern Ireland. So, you know, they are, kind of as you said, Elaine, they're better than the sum of their parts at the moment, and they've kicked on since the Euros, where I think we've almost stalled a little bit, perhaps. But again, there's levels of expectations. The Irish were like a pig in shit at the Euros, but when we got there, Wales had almost got themselves into a frenzy of, well, we need, you know, after the first couple of games, thinking, right, well, we're going to perform here, and it's kind of snowballed after that, which I think is kind of kicking us in the arse a little bit now.
Before we go to Austria v Ireland, I think we should go straight to Andy Lane for a quick update on the England game.
It's important, I think, that I showcase my amazing predictions of football skill levels of strikers at both Liverpool after having absolutely slated him and can't believe that he actually made it onto the field. Iago Aspas has scored for Spain to make it 2-1 in the 89th minute, so we're hoping that doesn't come down. But just again, England making fairly average strikers look brilliant and world class again. So, you know, carrying on that form there, which is good.
I'm hoping it's a goal of the season effort.
I mean, I don't doubt it. After having slated him, I don't. He's probably picked out the top bin from 35 yards. So, I'll see if I can get a GIF while we're talking.
That'd be lovely.
Do it. Let's move on to Ireland. Obviously, they share a group with Wales. They're sitting top of the tree and be very happy with a 1-0 win over Austria away as well. A decent game and a decent goal by McLean. This is again as good as surely as good as Ireland could have hoped for at this stage. You know, they top the tree by 2 points. There's you would expect Wales to hopefully be a bit better, but they probably know that Wales and Serbia are their main contenders there, and they're going great guns.
I think this is a really, really good result for Ireland. When I watched the Austria Wales game, okay, we gave them a fair bit of help for their goals, but. Mm. Again, they've got some really good players now. Arnautovic is a really good international player for Austria, and they play him in a really good way. He tore us to pieces at times when we played them a few weeks ago. And actually, I know they've got relatively few points, but they're much, much better than they should. Well, for me, they're much, much better than they showed in the Euros, and they're much, much better than they're currently showing in this qualification group. I think it's going to be a tough group in the running now. You've got four teams there who could arguably say that they would be in line for the top two places. I'm not sure all the groups have that sort of competitive edge to them.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think that's totally fair. And, you know, fair play to Ireland, because as you say, they didn't have the best tournament after having a decent decent qualification. They might have wanted to sort of, you know, especially... I think every home nation looked at Wales with kind of jealous eyes, hoping that the
sexy eyes or jealous eyes.
Sexy is far more apt. Should we take a quick break for half time, and we'll do a bit of Premier League chat.
Lovely. Get back to the real stuff.
Absolutely, and we'll give Andy a chance to have a look at that Aspas goal and give us an update.
No updates so far, but it has been described as a brilliant left foot effort, so expecting something class.
Okay, well, do join us in the second half. We'll see you in a few seconds. Just have a quick listen to this. Responsibility rests with Ruud van Nistelrooy. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us for the second half of the Libero podcast. And we're going to get a bit more domesticated on Yo Ass. Oh, wait. I can see something
in yonder distance.
This is going to date this podcast horribly, isn't it? But
this is great.
So often this is like, I'm going to get the lottery numbers after this. Cause I've just said, having said the Iago Aspas probably in the 89th minute hasn't led to a Spain comeback. Isco's just got a 96th minute equaliser for Spain. Solid effort there from England. Or according to Twitter, he has. It is. Comes through on my update. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Lovely.
Southgate will be devastated. That's
sack him.
Guys, we might want to re-record the England chat.
The England chat is fair. What more do we want from Spain? But let's get domesticated. Let's leave that alone. You know, more as live updates that are very dated. As they come in, but let's get to the Premier League, and tie of the round is Manchester United versus Arsenal. I've got sort of conflicting feelings over this, because I always get excited for these kind of games, and then I always remember that that Mourinho just likes to hug the life out of every big game he's in. So I'm kind of tentative about getting excited about it again. What about you guys?
I just don't think he can do it again. He did it against Liverpool a few weeks ago. I think that kind of luck run. He tried to do it against Chelsea the weekend after and got caught out in 30 seconds with Smalling trying to waste time on the ball in the 30 seconds and gives the ball away and gets found out. I can't see him. Sorry, is it at the Emirates or is it at Old Trafford?
Old Trafford.
It's going to be a tougher game for that reason. I would. It has got draw all over it. This is my favourite non-Liverpool Premiership game because it reminds me of unbelievable games I've seen.
It reminds you of happier times.
And violence.
This used to be, and a bit of violence. There was always a bit. It's a lovely bit of needle in this game, but it was always my favourite non-Liverpool game. I just thought it was always a high standard wherever it was, and it's had some absolutely cracking battles in it. Really, it's always been phenomenal rivalry kind of thing. But I think the Arsenal certainly got the firepower and to outdo Mourinho this time. Mourinho is not the manager. He hasn't got the squad he's had when he's played Wenger in any of his previous incarnations, I don't think, at this point. Much to, obviously, as Chris and I have talked about previously. But I think Arsenal will win. But I think it's going to be quite close. I think it's either 2-1 or it's 1-0, I think.
My worry is how fit a Sanchez we get back from Chile, who just continue to play him, whether he's injured, dead, got pneumonia, doesn't really matter. They will play him whatever happens.
He's quite good, though, to be fair.
I mean, yeah, he is really good, but we'd quite like him back with both his legs attached to his body.
He didn't he have like a low grade muscle tear or something, and he played a day later or something ridiculous like that. Yeah, I mean, that's mad, isn't it?
It is mad, and he seems to be, you know, he's keen as mustard to play every single game, which is, you know, is admirable. But if you're injured, you're injured.
Mm.
And you can't just run around all the time. Well, I can't run around at all, but he can't, you know, you can't just always play. You do have to take some, you know, whenever he gets taken off Arsenal, he looks pissed. Whatever minute it is and whatever game, he looks furious coming off.
I mean, someone else who is injured is Hector Bellerin. He's going to be definitely out. I mean, obviously, Sanchez is a big doubt. But then Manu, I've got no Zlatan. He's banned. So
is that a benefit is that a good thing or a bad thing for them?
It changes the dynamic of the game. I mean, if Sanchez plays, obviously, you know, and Arsenal fans will want him to play because he's been so good this season. And let's face it, Manchester United do not have the most robust of defences this season. Then there's every reason that Wenger can have his laugh over Mourinho, which he just basically has never had in a domestic game. But you know, I just feel like Man U are going to strangle this and be quite happy. Mourinho hasn't given in to the kind of swashbuckling style that Man U fans and Man U board and Man U the aura of the place expects. He's not gone into it. He's still very much his own man. He still likes to set up in the way he sets up and defence first. And knowing Mourinho, knowing his own team, he will probably set out to frustrate and nullify and kill off and try and nick a one goal and then go from there. I really see this playing out quite boringly, but Sanchez, as you say, is a big deal. It could make all the difference.
Do you think Mourinho's got the players to do that though? If he's missing Ibrahimovic, I'll be interested to see which Pogba turns up. I haven't seen a huge amount of Pogba. I don't watch a huge amount of United games live, but I'll be interested to see how he plays, in what position he plays, what incarnation of Pogba we're likely to see in this game, because I've seen a mixed bag, and obviously you guys spoke a couple of weeks ago about his performance against Swansea, and you know that's great, but we're the best one in the world, but not Swansea. So at some point he's going to have to really turn up in one of these big games to start justifying the price tag which he commanded.
It looks like he's playing a bit further forward now. They brought Carrick back in against Swansea, and it looked like the timing of sort of the rhythm of the team looked a bit better around Carrick in the centre of the park, and it allows Pogba to go further forward, which I think is really important. He reminds me of like Steven Gerrard when he first came through. Absolutely limitless potential, desperately wants to play central midfield, but probably isn't actually the right central midfielder. Chris will be ecstatic to hear me say that. Probably isn't a central midfielder. Will play his best football further forward where he can create and really get close to a striker and actually let the flair side of his game come out. And I think Mourinho's finally given him sort of a bit more license to go further forward as he's dropped Rooney and he's played Zlatan up there. So I presume he'll play Rooney up top in Zlatan's place.
You've got to think so.
You've got to think so. Unless he plays Rashford there and pulls Martial out wide, but there's obviously something between him and Martial. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic. We'll see how that plays out. Either which way, if they play the same way they did, and this is, I think we talked about this a lot because the show after the Liverpool 0-0, we may have talked about it, or it may be on the cutting room floor. I can't remember, but they have zero ambition. So Pogba and Zlatan spent the entire time, apart from one chance, was Zlatan heads it at goal, pretty much trying to almost pass the ball backwards. So I would expect them to reprise that kind of performance because Mourinho desperately needs to get some momentum and desperately needs to get a bit of a mentality going in that club. But I don't think they're strong enough to do it more than once or twice. And I think coming back from an international break, the level of mental energy that takes, Arsenal will score. It's just whether they can keep Man United out the other end. And I think there's a pretty good chance that based on the fact there's no Zlatan. So I think, yeah, again, I think it'll be an Arsenal win.
Interesting. Matt, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go with a conservative 1-1 draw, I think. I think it's going to be a tough one. I think we're going to have to work pretty hard to get anything out of this game.
You've got to back your own side. Come on, boys. This is shocking behaviour. There's no way I'd be Liverpool.
I reckon it's going to be a 4-0 win.
That's what I want to hear, Rich. You've not let your club down, Pritch. I don't think it's time to point fingers, but you're a real problem. You are a real problem.
Shall we move on to our next game in the order? I just wanted to spend a little bit of time on Sunderland v Hull, which doesn't, doesn't have. Yeah, I know. It doesn't. I kind of just like to hurt myself a little bit. But Sunderland v Hull. Two reasons I just wanted to touch upon it. It doesn't look like a major headline, but firstly, Will Keane is injured. Is out for 12 months. It's been announced, which is sad for him, having got an opportunity at a Premier League club. It'll be, that. Piss him off, and obviously it'll piss off the whole fans, and obviously wish him a quick recovery. But the other thing I just wanted to touch on is Sunderland got their by chance win last time they played, and me and Chris spoke at length about that win happened despite themselves. That happened, all the stats were in Bournemouth's favour, and you replay that game a dozen times and they probably don't win any of them. It'll be interesting to see if they take any momentum out of that, because, I know you're not a huge fan of Moyes, Andy, but they're against a relatively weak side. This is, they're at home. They're off the back of their first win of the season. They've broke that duck. Where do they go from here?
I think it's the international break would have come at the absolutely worst time for them, wouldn't it? Because as much as we look from the outside in and say that was a by chance win, the stats, Moyes could have very quickly, with them back in on Monday, if they had have been, or most of them, started to completely wash away all of that stuff, take the stats out of it, make it about the win and only about the win, and really instill that sort of confidence in that team. Probably lost quite a few players to international duty, probably not as many as the sort of the top end clubs, but quite a few. Probably reduced a bit of momentum. So they've probably spent quite a lot of time building up to this game and hopefully not building, well, hopefully building up too much in their minds. But, you'd like to think that he's been able to just sort of dissect that and go, no, we won. That's all that matters. Now let's take it on. And you look at how games work in pairs, and it would have been very easy for Sunderland and their fixtures to have the win at Bournemouth and then a run of horrific fixtures away to big sides. They haven't got that. They've got Hull up next. And this is where it's an absolute layup. They really need to take advantage of that, because if they can't win this game and they can't win two back to back against sides in and around them, in and around, use that phrase, beautiful, then they really are set for the drop. So I think I would, if I was going to be a betting man, I'd actually have it on Sunderland here, because I think David Moyes now is about prepping a team and what to do in an international break when you've won a game and being on a bad run of form will probably trump Phelan's experience, and also probably his squad, because I think Sunderland, despite themselves, have got the better squad.
Yeah,
I think
I tend to agree with that as well.
Sorry, Matt, you go first.
I'd have to say I agree with that. I think Sunderland they've just started in the last couple of games to show they're starting to turn things around. There's been a couple of okay performances, and then starting to, that first win was obviously quite big for them. And I just kind of sense that the past few games has been a slight shift change in Sunderland. I think a game like this is coming along at the perfect time for them. If they can win this game, you suddenly start to see a run of games coming together. And a run of games for somebody at the bottom of the table is 2 wins in 3 or 2 wins in 4 or 4 points from 8 or something like that. You know, it's those sort of runs they need to start putting together, and this could be a perfect time for them to do, to kind of start doing that.
Yeah, I mean, as you point out, it's not just a case of, you know, wanting them to do it. They kind of just have to do it now. Mm. Like, you know, it took them so long to get into any kind of momentum. They, let's face it, they're not in any kind of momentum. This is their chance to get into some sort of into positive momentum, where they've just spent the first part of the entire first part of the season just flailing at the bottom of the league. Hull are in the relegation. They will be in the relegation fight. They'll be there or thereabouts come the end of the season. They're sitting, what, are they on 10 points, I believe, and Sunderland are on 5?
Yeah. So,
you know, they're not going to overhaul them, but it's a win on Saturday will make it look like nothing. You know, this is on. And given that it's so tight at the bottom of the Premier League at the moment, you just feel like this is something they have to pull out. If they don't pull it out, I wonder how long they'll stick with Moyes. You know, he's favourite for the sack already as the next manager to go in the Premier League. I do wonder how long they'll stick at it, because you can't perpetually be in relegation fights, can you?
He's taken a lot of flack, hasn't he, about this. He made a comment a few weeks ago about sacking the manager won't solve the problems at Sunderland, and I think he's taken a bit of ridicule for that. But actually, as much as I don't like him, I do have to agree with him in that they've changed their manager so many times at Sunderland and still find themselves in exactly the same position. Can't win at home.
That is
scored dismembered by different managers trying to bring in their own style. Sacking the manager actually at this point isn't going to help, because they don't have an underlying infrastructure which supports the manager leaving and a change of philosophy. They need to actually sort of steady the ship. And Moyes will get them steady in time. He's just not an impact manager. So he won't do it straight away. He didn't at Everton, you know, it was slow. It was based on good organisation and a solid defence, and then buying one or two players around it. And the side he left there was actually really talented. And you know, mentally, I don't think he had it to sort of to kind of overhaul Liverpool, but he did leave a very good side there. And so I think he will get it right, and sacking him isn't an option. I think the thing about, you say about Hull being kind of on 10 points and on 5, and if they can, going over to them for a second, I think Phelan will be, I mean, it goes without saying that if they can get another 3 points and be 8 points ahead of Sunderland, you know, even if that's only one of the teams in the relegation battle, that gives them a bit of a cushion. And although you can't really talk about that with what will be 12 games gone, Sunderland aren't going to overhaul 8 points in a lot of sides in the league. So it's well, let's not do the proverbial six-pointer, but it does feel pretty big for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you said, Hull are going to be down in the relegation scrap. So if they've got an 8-point buffer down to Sunderland, who you know are also going to be in the relegation scrap, it almost takes out one player, one team out of that relegation scrap, because you know Sunderland aren't going to overhaul 8 points for the rest of the season. So it's a big win if Hull get it, but it's also on the flip side, it's a massive win if Sunderland get it, because suddenly that 2 points is then nothing. And then you start looking at Palace and Middlesbrough and West Ham are on 11 points. If they don't pick up wins this weekend and Sunderland do, you're suddenly 3 points off Sunderland, and Sunderland have been the perennial bottom of the table team. And suddenly you start to see a lot of itchy bums at West Ham, Palace, even up to Leicester. Leicester only on 12 points.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone who won't be fearing too much about the relegation battle is Liverpool Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool Lane.
So glad that I'm so. This is the one point of the international break where I'm really happy that basically I missed last week, so didn't get to talk about 6-1, but I do get to talk about Liverpool being top of the league.
top of the league leaders, Liverpool, to see how many L's I can get. Away to Southampton this weekend. You'd think they'd win that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, last season we went to, we've had a really good record at Southampton over the last few seasons. I think we won there 3-0 kind of on, in 13, 14, 14, 15. And then last season we had a bit of a blip in that we went 2-0 up and it was, look, we were absolutely cruising. And then it was one of Klopp's earlier games, or not early games. He kind of started to kind of shift the mentality of the side and they went 2-0 up in typical style. But they still had got that sort of really soft underbelly where if they conceded a goal, they instantly thought they were going to lose. And so there's definitely a bit of unfinished business. I would expect us to win, but I think Sunderland and Southampton aren't any mugs at all. They've played really well. I think Puel's got them really well organised. Romeo in the middle of the park is they've got a really solid spine, haven't they? In Charlie Austin, who scores the goals, Romeo in the centre of the park, Virgil van Dijk and Fonte at the back, and Fraser Forster. You look at that spine and you think, right, well, that's a really solid Premiership side. So there's a lot for us to do. Liverpool haven't shown the best form coming out of international breaks under Klopp, mainly because two of the best players are Firmino and Coutinho and have to fly back from fucking God knows where at whatever time and get back about 14 minutes before they have to start playing. So the last game we played was United 0-0. Maybe the one before that was Leicester 4-1. So, you know, there is a balance there, but I definitely would be seeking 3 points. Liverpool have got the form to do it. We've got the game to do it. But whether the international break hampers us or not, I don't know. It's looking, I think Lallana's gone off. Well, Lallana's definitely gone off injured tonight. And I'm looking at Twitter. I think Henderson may have gone off with a knock as well. So,
and Tadic went off as well in his match against Wales, didn't he? There's talk of him needing surgery.
So I mean,
he'll be a big miss for us.
Bad luck for him, but gutted for him, obviously. But that feels like, you know, their spark and their flair. He really does. He does make that tick. So yeah, it should be a 3 points. But again, I'm keeping it pretty real, and I'm just thinking, you know, there's a loss out there for Liverpool. There's a bit of a slap in the face at some point for Liverpool. Because if it carries on the way it is, we'll have won the title by about February. So, you know, I think probably there's a
don't sell those shirts.
There's a wake up call coming at some point. So I'm gonna take it game by game, I think.
Matt, any views on this one?
I'm quite looking forward to it. It's probably gonna be the game I look forward to most this weekend, apart from the Arsenal Man U game. It's Liverpool. I don't think anybody can argue, even the most kind of sturdily hateful Liverpool or kind of anti-Liverpool person would can't say that he hasn't enjoyed watching Liverpool play this season, and I think this game has got good things written all over it. Southampton have been a little bit hit and miss this season for me. They haven't quite reached the heights they did last season. They come a little bit more functional than they have been in recent years. You know, losing people like Mane out of their squad has made them a little bit more, not to say workmanlike, but like you said, you take Tadic out of that team and there's not that much spark left in there. But Charlie Austin started to put away the goals. Now he's started more and more games. So it should be an interesting game. I just want to, you know, big thing for Southampton is Van Dijk at the back. He's got to be the next one off the rank, I would have thought, in terms of moving to a much bigger club.
So from Southampton to Liverpool, you mean?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Natural transition. Speaking of transition, let's move on to Spurs and West Ham. You talk about a bit of spark in the game. There might be a bit of spark in this one. They get on so well. It's always a kind-hearted affair.
It's all apples and pears, isn't it? Apples and pears.
Nice. Is that as good as you get?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah. Shall we move on?
Yeah, that's
on paper, this says comfortable win for Spurs, doesn't it? Given West Ham being, let's face it, a bit shit this season. But you know, we've seen in previous encounters that West Ham have defied the odds against Spurs, even when they've been a bit shit. I mean, even with Allardyce, I think they did the double over them one season. So you do wonder how this one's going to play out. Personally, I'm going for a draw. What about you?
I also don't think Spurs, even though Spurs are lying fifth, it doesn't feel like they've really hit their straps this season yet. they've drawn quite a lot of games that they could have, maybe should have won. Without Kane, they've looked a little bit toothless up front. I think Janssen's really struggled to land in the Premiership at the moment. They've kind of hit a little bit of luck with the guy whose name I'm never going to be able to pronounce from South Korea, kind of popping up and scoring a few goals earlier on in the season.
Son? That's not that hard, mate.
I was going to go with full name.
With Iheanacho.
I thought you were talking about Alderweireld. I mean, that's a bit harder. <if you want. laughs>
Yeah, carry on, mate.
But they haven't really shown like consistent form. They've kind of gone in peaks and troughs. I'd be interested if Kane starts for them again, because you know he kind of got let off this England game to go back and train with Spurs ahead of the weekend. I think with him back now, they will kind of start to kick on. It really does make that top five or six really, really interesting looking at the table.
I think this one's got a draw written all over it. I think Spurs haven't really flattered. They're flat to deceive. I think West Ham are starting to improve. I tell you what, segregation needs to have got in place as well for this game, because I tell you what, the way end meets the home fans is going to be tasty if they haven't sorted that segregation out.
It's at Spurs though.
Oh, right? Is it? Yeah. No, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
I wanted more sun-issued headlines about dark returns to the dark days of the 80s, just because one ground hasn't had proper segregation for about 5 minutes. But I think it's got a draw. I think West Ham have improved. I think Kane will be fit. But he'll play. I don't think Ali is a big miss for them. Eriksen's not quite playing, not quite firing. But I can see a draw. I can see it's been a draw.
Just one more before we round it up for the day. Palace Man City caught my eye. Palace catch my eye quite a lot lately, just because I still can't really believe how badly they do, considering their team on paper. Opta Joe tweeted not that long ago saying Crystal Palace have claimed just 0.73 points per game in 2016, which is the worst of any team in England's top four tiers.
Oh my god.
I mean, it just, you know, we like to pick on Pardew, and everyone likes to pick on Pardew, but it really does hammer it home that, you know, this is a team that is desperately underperforming considering what it has there. And you know, they're now up against a Man City team that dominate possession, dominate every statistic you can think of, and I feel like a thumping is coming.
When they played, so when I watched them play Liverpool a few weeks ago, I said on this podcast, I think about 6-7 weeks ago, I was thinking, I thought Palace might come into their own, because they'd really established a style of play with two out-and-out wingers in Townsend and Zaha, Benteke through the middle, and they'd really kind of sorted out a pattern of play. They really haven't. They kind of have really flattered to deceive in that respect across the in the last few weeks, and I think Liverpool just exposed them. Liverpool, you know, it wasn't one of those games where even though Palace got level, Liverpool got jittery. It was just like, if we keep playing, we're going to do this lot, because they have a defined pattern of play, but it's very easy to get around. They do afford you space all over the place. I think City will probably stroll this one quite easily. I think it'll be really interesting. I think there could be some goals there. I'm still going to stick with my captain of Aguero in my fantasy Premier League team, I think, for definite.
Yeah, I think that's a wide choice.
Or is that a bluff?
Oh. Playing mind games. I'm not at that level.
Sorry, lads. It's more for people that might be listening to it that might actually be worried about a captain choice. I've got a bet with a few people. So.
Matt, do you feel any different about this one?
No, I think it's a drubbing. I'm sure I'll be wrong. I'm sure Crystal Palace get a 1-0 win now, but this has got drubbing written all over it. I think Aguero, just as long as he's fit, as long as he can stay fit, I've said it before, he'll score 30 goals this season. He's looking absolutely lethal at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, one last thing, just before we go. A bit of breaking news, that's Matt. A bit of breaking news the last couple of days. Gerrard to depart from LA Galaxy this season, if not already. And Lampard also saying he's going to leave New York. Do we see them ending up back in the Prem? Exciting transfer talk already.
Can I just say that Chris is absolutely gutted he's not here, because he will not. He is absolutely gutted that there is going to be a conversation about Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard that he cannot interject and try and wind me up about.
I want them both to come back and both to join the same club and try and play together in the central midfield.
And that club is Derby.
Oh, please, God, let that happen.
On that note, we're not getting any better than that. On that note, we are wrapping up for the day. Thank you for listening to us and listening to the Libero podcast. If you want to drop us a message, you can do so and do follow us at www.facebook.com/Libero podcast. And we'll catch you next week for some more fun, and we'll try and get Chris's opinion on the midfield duo of Lampard and Gerrard coming to a Derby team near you. Say goodbye, everyone.
See you later.
Aspas.
Aspas indeed. Catch you later, guys. Thanks for listening.